zoom back into history, thousands of years ago, the Sumerian civilization, what were the clay tablets? That was financial reporting. They were recording on clay tablets different transactions. And then you fast forward to the Italian city-states like Genoa and Florence. They had double entry bookkeeping, right? Huge innovation. And now we have full financial reports in our pockets.
Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that unites the financial reporting, ESG audit, and risk teams needed like cheese and pepperoni on a New York slice. My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation, and I'm so happy to have you with us. I am also very happy to have Mike Gravina joining me. Mike, could you tell everyone about yourself?
Certainly. I am not an accountant, but longtime listeners know I'm an off-the-books producer and recovering Cherry Coke addict. And I'm happy to be here to introduce a very special episode.
It was a really special episode. We were in New York City celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Workiva being a public company. That included us ringing the bell at the New York Stock Exchange and us recording Off the Books right out in front of the exchange on Broad Street. It was absolutely phenomenal. Mike, you were there. What did you think?
I thought it was great. It was a part of New York, even though I'd lived there, I had never been to before because I was more of a Brooklyn boy, let's say, than a Wall Street guy. And while I was there, but yeah, it was very cool. And we had a bunch of great guests that over the next few weeks, all you lovely listeners and viewers will be able to enjoy our conversations with them. But we are starting off, let's call it a mini series because I like to call everything a mini series, Steve. We're starting off our New York Stock Exchange mini series with an incredibly special guest, Nick Mazing.
That's exactly right. Now, we could have coordinated a little bit better. And so, Nick, who's listening to this episode, apologies. We didn't actually get your name in soon enough for you to be able to come on the other side of the fence. That was our bad. But what we did do is we recorded outside the fence, and we actually tried to set it up like this was a happenstance chance meeting in front of the New York Stock Exchange. We did have a phenomenal discussion with Nick Mazing, who I refer to as the most interesting man in capital markets in the U.S., so why don't we have our audience take a listen to our discussion with Nick Mazing.
We are here in front of the New York Stock Exchange celebrating Workiva's 10-year anniversary of being a public company. And we are so, oh my gosh.
Steve Soder.
Nick Mazing, what are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
Well, we're here celebrating Workiva's 10-year anniversary of being a public company.
Wow, congratulations. Is this your bus?
This is our bus, yes.
You drove it from Iowa on the audit trail?
Maybe I didn't drive it, but somebody drove it.
It's like a pioneer train in reverse.
It's a reverse pioneer train. I love it. Nick, so glad again that you joined us. This is a special day for Workiva. We're celebrating our 10 years as a public company. So there's a little bit of history involved. You yourself are a bit of a market historian. I've often said you're the most interesting man in capital markets. What can you tell us about some history?
Well, I mean, number one, I really like that we're here in front of the New York Stock Exchange, even though less than 1% of the volumes are actually floor trading. It's certainly a very symbolic building in the history of capitalism. And when you think about capitalism, it has lifted billions of people out of poverty. And financial reporting plays such an important role in that system of capital allocation, whether it's for us as individual investors or whether it's professional investor, whether it's pension and foundations and other allocators investing directly or indirectly. We know almost certainly that what we're purchasing as shares in companies are actually real because of financial reporting, right? When we zoom back into history, thousands of years ago, the Sumerian civilization, what were the clay tablets? That was financial reporting. They were recording on clay tablets different transactions. And then you fast forward to the Italian city-states like Genoa and Florence. They had double entry bookkeeping, right? Huge innovation. And now we have full financial reports in our pockets, you know, on our phones where we can go into Edgar or other tools and we can read those reports. So it's certainly very exciting to be here.
No, it's definitely exciting. And you know, I remember one of the first times that I had heard the role that accountants play in financial reporting and how important that is to the US capital markets for that same reason. I think a big piece of it is that inherently, if you see a set of financial statements accompanied by an audit opinion, you are implying that, hey, you can trust this information. Somebody has looked at it. Professionals have put it together, certified, credentialed professionals and auditors. Anyway, when you think about it from that standpoint, it's actually kind of like a little bit exciting, you know, a little bit of the energy.
And I recently heard that in the 1920s, about a third of the U.S. traded companies did not provide any financials.
That's right.
And now we get them on schedule.
That's exactly
sometimes
right.
Sometimes even ahead of schedule.
Sometimes.
If they use the word Kiva.
That's exactly right. Now, we've talked a little bit about the history, Nick. Anything that you want to share with us about maybe the future and where all this is heading?
Yeah, it's interesting. 10 years in the public markets is certainly an achievement because, you know, your alma mater, Arizona State, Professor Hendrik Bessenbinder put out a study recently that in the history of the stock market, he looked at the last 90 years, 50% of the wealth generated came from 86 companies. These are your Googles, your Amazons, your Walmarts, your Home Depots, and so on, right? And everybody knows the stock market goes up. Wall Street has done a very good job at, you know, advertising that. But in reality, very few stocks do as well as Workiva has in their history. So I looked at the top 10 IPOs of 2014. Six of those top 10 companies were already acquired. They're no longer independent entities. And a few others have not done well at all. And when you look at Workiva stock, when you look at Workiva's revenue, really, it has been doing extremely well. And that is, in my view, and that's not an investment recommendation, Workiva has been very well positioned in the last 10 years for all the big waves. You look at moving workloads to the cloud, right? 10 years ago, cloud was relatively novel. Workiva was there. More recently, you look at ESG and then ESG reporting, right? You started doing ESG reporting in recent history. Now you look at generative AI. Obviously, huge role, not only in putting together financial statements, but also in interpreting financial statements. So on both ends, you have generative AI. And when you look at the next 10 years, nobody knows what the future holds, but you can be pretty certain there's going to be more reporting rather than less. You look at, let's say, even if in the US, the climate disclosure proposal may not be going anywhere, but if people read your interview in Investor Relations magazine about CSRD becoming the de facto global standard because it's a large jurisdiction, you know there's going to be more ESG reporting. And then when you look at the more recent audit proposals where there's going to be more about fraud detection and prevention and things like that, well, guess what? There's going to be more audit work as well. So I think Workiva is fairly well positioned going forward for the next 10 years as well.
Well, when we went public in 2014, if I remember correctly, it was about $14 a share. I was not an employee, but I was a very happy customer at that time. We have certainly grown since then. I love that you brought up that combination of sustainability, financial reporting, all subject to audit and risk. I remember when the SEC's proposal came out on climate disclosures, that aha moment that I had that all of this stuff is starting to converge. We're going to use existing reporting mechanisms, at least in the US as well as globally as well. So all of this stuff is eventually going to make its way into a 10K. And the fact that you are going to need to bring, of course, the teams together, the processes, the data, subject it all to audit. I love that thought of having all of this coming together. When you talk about, though, investors' ability to consume all of this, you know, the basic argument is that investors find this information material and they need it and they want it. Maybe naively, I have often wondered, okay, are they getting too much information? I know you interact with the investor community a lot. What's your sense? Are we overloading them with information at this point and calling all of it material?
I don't think that there is an investor who would say, give me less information, please. If anything, they would want more information more frequently. So for example, you have jurisdictions that don't require quarterly reporting, right? That's another, you know, I think an easy lift. There's no reason why reporting should not be quarterly globally. And then when you look at there is even some US companies that disclose metrics monthly, like Progressive Insurance or Interactive Brokers. So monthly reporting may become a standard, which is obviously a very good setup for people who provide services in that space.
Let's talk just for a minute about AI. And I'm wondering, how do you see AI being used to digest all of this information? Another kind of aha moment or realization that I had is when I was thinking about like the user of financial statement, the user of financial information. It's kind of what it's referred to generally in the accounting literature. And I thought, but we often think about that as an individual, but what if that's actually a machine or artificial intelligence? Do you think that changes that means of communication and how we typically think about traditional financial reporting?
It is a little bit of a, since we serve investors, we serve IR professionals and we serve corporates, I would say it's a little bit of a, you know, arms race. You know, you have AI being used to, you know, create financial disclosure, but it's also being used to interpret financial disclosures and seeing what's new, does this differ? So I think you're going to see AI usage on both sides just only go up.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, and as I think about the exciting opportunities that that represents for financial reporting professionals as a tool to drive efficiency, as a tool to drive better disclosures, better ingestion of data, anyway, I think it's all very exciting. Well, Nick, you have been on the podcast 12 times. I think this technically makes 13th. So again, how appropriate that that we happen upon each other here in New York and right in front of the Stock Exchange. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much
Thank
for joining
you.
Us.
Well, thank you again to Nick Mazing for joining us 13 times on Off the Books. And thank you, dear listener, as always, for surfing along with us. I'm Steve Soter. That was Mike Gravano. And this has been Off the Books presented by Workiva.
Please subscribe, leave a review, tell your buddies if you like this show, and if you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a note in the comments. Or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.